if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast 164. This is our 2021 Betfred British Masters and AT&T Byron Nelson tips and picks episode. Barry O'Hanrahan and Paul Williams join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss this week's European Tour and PGA Tour action. Good morning, gents.
Morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more information. And, of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world-famous Golf Betting System website with our in-depth betting previews, masses of tournament statistics and our predictor models. And they're all available. It's completely free of charge with no paywall. Please subscribe to this podcast and drive the popularity of the show. We're available on Twitter. Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. Plus, look out for the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel, where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. You can also listen to this podcast on there. So if you are listening on YouTube, please like the show and subscribe to the channel. Now, you guys as listeners power this podcast, so we need your 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. Any reviews coming through this week, of course, I will read out on next week's PGA Championship show, which is sure to get a huge listenership. Now, got some quick fire ones this week. First one, entitled Great Show, 5 stars. I love the show. The host reminds me of a cheesy 70s DJ. Keep the good work up. And that is from BA Golf 5 in Great Britain.
That's definitely a compliment. A nostalgia moment. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I like that a lot, Steve.
70s DJ, would that be someone like Kenny Everett? Or... Jimmy Savile? I'm not going down there. Right,
oh,
next
Steve,
one,
no.
Every week, yeah, every week, 4 stars on this one. Listen to this every week for the stats and breakdown. Have a drink every time they say the word clearly. And that is Double Bogey Dan in Great Britain.
Ooh, which one of us is that? Because I think I do the obviously too much, and one of you lads must do the clearly too much.
There's a clearly, there's an obviously, and I always say interesting.
It's hard to avoid the verbal tics when you're just doing things off the fly without a script. They naturally kick in. But yeah, we try.
Last one. Brilliant podcast, 5 stars. Great listen every week. Great insights, great banter, great tips. And that's from Davey Boy, 1966, and he's in Great Britain.
Lovely stuff. Well, thanks all three of you for your comments. Very much appreciated as ever.
I know Barry's got a life and he needs to be finished quite quickly this week. So let's quickly talk about last week. He's back. He's definitely back. It came. We saw it coming. I didn't tip him up, but he did win, and that was Rory McIlroy. But I know that McIlroy's back, but you're back as well, Paul. You cracked Garrick Hicko at 12-1.
Yeah. He was he was completely dominant in the end, wasn't he? That is an incredibly talented kid we've got on our hands there. I think 3 wins now since what. June, July last year when he won his first one over in the Open de Portugal. Up to, 51st in the world ranking now. So he's just knocking on the door of that top 50. But he'll get there and he'll be a feature in a lot of tournaments to come. He's got such an aggressive attitude and such a capable game. It's very good to watch. And he was never really in trouble, was he, on Sunday? always helps when you throw an ace in there. In fact, two of my players got a hole in one last week, which first time I can remember that happening in the past. But really pleased to get him over the line. Adrian Ause squeezed into the places, for a part place payout as well. So I got a bit back on him, despite making a quad on Saturday, which took him out of the winning equation at that point. Two shots clear he was at that point, and then obviously looked up at the leaderboard, decided that was a little bit too much for him, and was suddenly playing five off the tee on the par five. But recovered a little bit. And
that's a good nine.
Yeah, it wasn't a bad nine in the end.
So you've had two winners in the past 4 weeks. It's amazing how this stuff turns around, isn't it?
Yeah, we kind of preach the same thing, don't we? It's patience in this game, because you can hit the crossbar a lot. You can go bad runs, can't you, where you're literally getting nowhere near it, or you're sitting there and you're producing tied ninths and tied 11ths, and it's you're like banging your head against a brick wall, and then you get a couple of wins and it all feels better again. There's a couple of people I wanted to mention, actually. Brody on Twitter, who sent us a screenshot of his each way double that he did on Rory and Garrick Higo. Very well done, Brody. And Craig Cooper on our Facebook group did the same double off a £5 free bet, so didn't even have to invest anything.
That's beautiful.
If you can nail
that is an ouch moment for that bookmaker.
If you can nail a transatlantic double off of a free bet, then hats off. Well done. Yeah, absolutely. Well done to both Brody and Craig for your wins last week. And if you do get any big wins like that, do send them over to us, because it's always good to see people, and good to celebrate success of our listeners and readers as well.
Arnoux reminded me, congratulations, by the way. I mean, two wins in 4 weeks is fantastic. I see that your P&L's looking a lot healthier.
Finally, yes.
yeah. I need to follow you somehow. We need... it's funny what you said there about T9s and stuff like that. We both had 36-hole leaders this week. And Arnoux didn't feel overly comfortable, did he, on Saturday with the lead. You can say the same about Matt Wallace, who I had as a tied leader going into Saturday. And I think he shot four over on the first 10 holes on Saturday. And, you know, as per usual, I'm holding my head in my hands, wondering what I've done to deserve this. But on Wallace's side, I thought he showed great maturity, actually. He righted the ship. And I think, again, a lot of this must be Gareth Lord, the caddy. Righted the ship, played the last eight holes with six pars and two birdies to turn plus four into plus two, which isn't a total disaster, still in the top 10. And then he showed that fighting spirit that we've been mentioning on podcasts now for a long time. And that's why I think Wallace will hang around. I think he's an outside chance for a Ryder Cup spot.
Feels like he's building, doesn't it? Feels like he's building to something.
He's driving, is he? He's moving forward.
Yeah. Adding a piece to the puzzle every week.
Yep, absolutely. So I thought Wallace's performance was excellent. I really did. But we're going back to this tied ninth point. I had Bubba Watson in sixth spot, 55-1, with two holes to go on Sunday. And I'm thinking, wow, I could actually end up, yeah, okay, Rory, didn't pick Rory. I've been preaching Rory for months on podcasts, didn't pick him. Fair enough, get that. But I can end up here with two each-way payouts at 55 and 66-1. Great. And he then goes triple, double to close Bubba. I mean, you just can't, what can you do? And I know those holes were playing tough. The 16th, 17th and 18th were the hardest holes on the golf course Sunday at Quail Hollow. They were tough, but that's no excuse to go five over on your last two holes. That cost him a lot of dollars and a lot of FedEx Cup points, Bubba Watson.
Yeah, no, frustrating. I know you were on him. I was on him as well. I saw a lot of people on Twitter who were on him as well. And it's mad, isn't it? You know, it's such a painful game when that happens, because you sit there for the best part of 4 days watching your player get himself into a contending position or a position to give you a decent profit on an each-way bet, and then in the space of 20 minutes, it's all gone down the pan.
So Rory, great to see him back in the winner's circle, his favourite golf course on the planet. We kind of ummed and ahed on the pod last week about him. I know that you invested. You were very quick on Friday. I know that for a fact, Paul, because you were telling us that. Was it after a couple of the early birdies you managed to back him at 22-1 on Betfair Exchange?
Yeah, well, 21 it was. So
for
yeah,
for the PGA Championship.
For the PGA, and after he continued, I got him at 18-1 as well, a little bit further down. So I've got a couple of investments for him for next week. Which, given how he played in the end, I'm quite pleased with. They both went only, but so be
doesn't
it.
Matter.
So, no, he's now down to, 10-1? So he's going to go off favourite for that, particularly with DJ having withdrawn this week, which I'm sure you'll get into shortly. But that is going to make Rory the clear favourite, I think, for the PGA Championship at Kira Island. And quite rightly so, given his previous form there. We've talked at length about Rory, haven't we? And those weeks where he finds it, where he finds his form, typically coincide with a week where he just nails every putt. And I saw a stat yesterday where he'd made 52 from 52 putts inside 6 feet.
That was awesome.
It's mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's not the first time we've seen him do that and go and turn whatever form he's in into something positive, a winning performance from a performance with a flat stick that complements his normal strong tee to green game, notwithstanding the 18th hole on Sunday, of course.
Steve, you might be able to dig into this. Actually, just a quick one on Rory's putting. Like, does he have better putting performances when the greens are fast like they were, or does he?
I think so. Yeah. I tweeted on Monday, you can't split him between bent grass and Bermuda grass. They're exactly 6 wins apiece on each. Mm. He's also got, I think, 3 on bent Poa, and clearly he's got 1 on Pass, but Kira Island. So it isn't a surface thing with Rory. Speed, potentially, yes. We said as well last week about Quail, it's one of those venues where strokes gain putting is more powerful to a certain extent than strokes gain tee to green. And this week, he was 9th for tee to green, 1.95 strokes gained per round. And his putting, he was 3rd in the field for putting. And unlike previous winners, the strokes gained putting metric didn't outscore tee to green, but even so, it was still 1.74 strokes gained putting per round. The only other guys in the top 5 for strokes gained putting last week in the top 10 were Bryson DeChambeau, who was 2nd for strokes gained putting. There's a note for people. And Satoshi Kodaira, who it was nice to see his name towards the top of a leaderboard. I mean, if you're looking for a completely alien track to Satoshi Kodaira, who's struggling to bang it 290 yards, it's Quail Hollow. So again, that's one for the notepad. Kodaira on a shorter course coming up somewhere. I can see that. Bermuda, I mean, you could see someone like Satoshi Kodaira going very well at Sedgefield for the Wyndham Championship.
Mm. He owes us one.
He owes you 2-1, that's for certain. Okay, I'll just quickly run through the PGA Championship betting to clarify that. I'm picking odds from Paddy Power. Rory McIlroy is the 10-1 favourite. We then have 3 at 12-1, Justin Thomas, John Rahm and Dustin Johnson, who's just withdrawn with a knee complaint at the Byron Nelson. Bryson DeChambeau at 14s. And then we've got our boy Xander Schauffele at 16s with Brooks Koepka. And I've also missed, our apologies, Jordan Spieth at 14. So he's the same price as DeChambeau. Koepka 16, Schauffele 16s. And then we're out to the 25s. Colin Morikawa, Hideki Matsuyama, Patrick Cantlay, who I wouldn't touch with yours at the moment, and Victor Hovland.
The PASP King.
Yeah. I'll state this right now. There's no way, shape or form that Victor Hovland won't be in my tips next week.
Yeah, I know. How can you not? He's playing unbelievable golf at the moment.
How would you, Barry, and we'll move on to the... one last question. I'll throw this one to Barry before the Betfred British Masters. How would you relate Victor Hovland's game to Rory McIlroy back in 2012 when he won the PGA Championship at Kira Island?
Oh, God.
They're very similar, aren't they? They've got to be.
I think there's just a freedom in Hovland's game that was there when Rory was at that. And without being specific on anything at all, it's just, it seems like there's a freedom and just an enjoyment in what he's doing, and kind of a care. I love his reactions to setbacks on the course. He just kind of shrugs it off and gets on with it. And there's a lot to be said for having short-term memory loss in golf, you know, for these guys. You have a setback and just carry on. So Hovland's just, yeah, popped into my head over the weekend, went on to the shortlist for PGA Championship review.
Sixth for off the tee, 20th for approach. He was neutral for around the green, which is his weakness.
That's good for him.
Seventh for tee to green and 13th for putting.
Yeah.
So Hovland is, he's just there. Has to be in the team. His two wins on the PGA Tour have both been on Paspalum greens on coastal golf courses. Just, it's just there, isn't it, really?
I mean, they should all just have a drink party for the week and not play. Just give him the PGA Championship, or just let him and Rory go head to head.
We have, you know, and also 28-1. We have, you know, that isn't for a first time major winner. That isn't about, that isn't a ridiculously low price that, you know, you've been constantly getting on John Rahm, who hasn't won his first major. At 20, 28, 25-1's kind of low, but it's ballparky.
Matt Suarez was
35s, wasn't he, when he won the Masters a few weeks ago?
Yeah, if the money keeps coming in for Rory, as the bookies push their final markets out for next week, you might find you get a little bit more on that as well.
You think so?
Yeah, think maybe. So. You might get 33s.
I think you'll get 33s, 35s on Cantley, but I don't see Victor's moving anywhere north.
We shall see.
The bookmakers know. They don't want to take money on him, I don't think. Right, we have European Tour action in the United Kingdom this week. We have the Betfred British Masters. Just to highlight from the very top, Betfred, the tournament sponsors, have gone 10 places each way of 50 odds at their own Betfred British Masters this week. So well worth a look at that particular market. If you haven't got a Betfred account, of course, you can open one with or via Golf Betting System. Bet £10, get £30 in free bets, plus 60 free spins available for those 18 plus in the UK via Golf Betting System with Betfred. Full terms and conditions, of course, available on our website. Over to you, Paul.
Yes, thank you. Danny Willett is this year's host. It hops about a bit, this event, doesn't it? So we get a different host, different hosting duties, different venues each year. But this year we've got Danny Willett. He's hosting this year's renewal at the Belfry. Clearly, we've seen the Belfry. Clearly.
Where do you think it comes
it's
from?
It's me. It's me. I've realised it's me. The data for the Belfry is on the website. So we've got two sets of data if you're trying to look into this event. We've got associated data for the Belfry where we had the UK Championship last year and some older British Masters events. Plus, we've got the British Masters events as well, which have run at various venues over the last few years as well. So you've got two choices of ways to look at it. So do check out the data on the website this week. But we're at the Belfry. It starts on Wednesday, so do bear that in mind if you're having a bet. Those players who are playing at the Belfry and are getting across to Kewer Island are being given an extra day's grace. So get your bets on before the Wednesday start over here in the UK. You know, there's a lot of players that are playing over in Kewer Island next week. Well, there's a few in this week's field, and I guess that's left us with some players who've chosen to have the week off, some players that are playing over in your event, Steve, over in the US, and a few of the players that are over here. It still left us with a decent enough field, perhaps not one that you would expect or want for a British Masters, but good enough, I guess. Bob McIntyre's the favourite this week, 14-1. Martin Keimer, 18-1. Bernd Wiesberger, 18-1. Sam Horsfield, 22. Same price, Rasmus Højgaard. The host, Danny Willett's 28-1. Dean Burmester, who won a couple of weeks back, 28-1. Then we've got the likes of Matthias Schwab, Thjorbjørn Olsen, 30-1 and 33-1 bar those players. And as Steve said at the top just a second ago, do check out the prices on Betfred. They're standout this week, 10 blazers each way, and there are some decent prices left on a few of the players in the field.
They haven't been shy as well. They've got a few like market-leading prices, or at least market-leading tied prices with the 10 blazers. So, yeah, fair play to them. There's some good stuff there.
It looked to me very much like they put their regular market out just with 10 places to attract punters into their brand, which, given they're the lead sponsors for this event, is absolutely the right thing to do and should be applauded, I think.
I took advantage of a couple of them.
Of my four, which I'll go into in a few minutes, two of mine with Betfred as well, and they were at the time tied or standout best price as well as the 10 places. So can't knock it, really. The track this week is the Brabazon course at the Belfry. It's hosted four Ryder Cups over the years. We know it relatively well, particularly for people who've been on and around the circuit for a while. As well as the European Tour events that I mentioned before. We've got the UK Championship, which was hosted here last year, post-lockdown. We've also got a number of British Masters events in the early part of this century as well, from 2000 to 2008, give or take. There's a few events there to look at in this week's data. And I listened to a Danny Willett interview last night. He was talking about how, really, the track hasn't fundamentally changed since the last Ryder Cup here in 2002. They've added a few tee boxes here and there. It's now up to 7,300 yards, which par 72. But it's still fundamentally the test that we saw 20 years ago, I guess. Slightly different to last week. Very different to last week in that it's got three par threes, three par fives, and 12 par fours. So kind of the antithesis of last week's, I guess, in terms of the way it sets up. Bent par greens as well. And the greens tend to favour those players who aren't quite as adept with the flat stick as some other tracks. So I'm expecting to see quite a different kind of look and feel to the event compared to last week or the last few weeks over in the Canary Islands, at least. For me, this is a good tee to green test where anything into double figures under par has got a chance coming into Sunday. It's kind of your classic mid score range for me, Steve. This track this week, and if you look back historically, winning scores go back to 2000. Jose Maria Lathabelle won at 13 under. Henrik Stenson won at 13 under the year after 2001. Angel Cabrera won here at 10 under in 2002. Paul Casey at 11 under. Johan Edfors 11 under in 2006, Lee Westwood 15 under 2007, Gonzalo Fernandez Castaño 12 under in 2008, and Rasmus Højgaard at the UK Championship last year won at 14 under. So even as a par 72, the scoring doesn't get away from the course here. It's a good, solid test, I think. Showery kind of spring-like conditions expected over here in the UK. Light winds, 60 Fahrenheit. We may get some thunder and lightning. I've seen on the forecast quite recently some heavy showers. So there might be a couple of brief interruptions to play, but nothing serious, I don't think. For me, ball striking's the key here. You look back to Rasmus's win last year and four of the top six in that final leaderboard ranked inside the top six for greens and regulation on the week. And as I said, the greens are fairly easy. They do tend to favour those players who aren't the best of putters. And when you see the names like Lee Westwood, Paul Casey, Henrik Stenson having won here, Gonzalo Fernandez Castaño, that tells
even
you. Even
Cabrera.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a great winners list here, isn't it? At this venue,
it is. It tells you that it's not a putting contest by any stretch. And again, if you look back at Rasmus's win. I picked the top four players through the line. Rasmus was fourth for strokes gained approach. Martin Kaymer, who finished third, was second for strokes gained approach. Benjamin Hébert, who was also tied third, he was first for strokes gained approach back in this UK Championship event last autumn. So that's kind of the approach I've taken this week. Yeah, other than that, you've not got a great deal to go on, I don't think. You've only got last year's event in the kind of immediate recent future, recent past. Course event history is patchy, and even if you look at the winners here, those the list of those names that I read through a second ago, then their previous efforts at the Belfry don't really suggest that, that the course history is anything massive to go on. So I've not got hung up on those players who've played in the past. I've not suggested that they've need a kind of a sparkling Belfry record. Having said all that, the player that I've picked at the top, I've gone with four, I've boiled it all down to four players. The player that I've picked at the top of the preview this week, my main bet, is Rasmus Højgaard, who I got at 22-1. He'd been tipped up just before I put my preview out, so his prices were tumbling massively. But I got 22-1. There's still a little bit of 22-1 about Rasmus. And you know, if you look through these players here, a number of the front runners really will have half an eye on Kiwa Island. And Rasmus just slipped out last week. He's just slipped outside the top 100 of the world ranking. So by my estimation, when they put that final field together, which we should be getting any day soon, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
He shouldn't qualify for the USPGA Championship, because traditionally it's been the top 100 in the world rankings, and then they go into this PGA Tour money list to top up the numbers from there.
Yeah,
so,
they do, yeah.
So I think he's 101st or 103rd now after last week. So having been kind of on the cusp for a number of weeks, he's just slipped out, which has got to be a massive disappointment to him. But I guess also it could act as a decent motivator. He was second in this event last year behind Renato Paratori over at Close House. And that result there kick-started a run of form that saw him finish sixth at the Hero Open, third at the English Championship, and then he won here at the Belfry, beating Justin Walters in a playoff, you may remember. Heartbreak for Walters, but we've seen that the promise that we've got from Rasmus Højgaard, or both the Højgaard brothers, in fact, as I guess something that we're going to see more and more of over the next few years. And actually, it's been his twin brother, Nikolai, who's been more prominent recently from what we've seen over in the European Tour. Rasmus has been over in the US, hasn't quite worked out in the US, but perhaps that bit of sibling rivalry will spur him on as well. He's seen his brother at the top of a couple of leaderboards or thereabouts over the last few weeks. And the last time we saw Rasmus, he was 12th over in Austria, another tricky test, another test that I'd correlate quite nicely to this one over here at the Belfry, kind of similar winning score, similar demand on a player. And I think that form is much more relevant than a couple of missed cuts, one of which was in the pairs event over in the Zurich Classic, the other one over at the Valspar, I think. He'll come back to Europe. It's a different level, and also he's got that positive course form to fall back on from last year. So I think he can become that sixth multiple post-lockdown winner this week. It's been a real trend, a real glut of players winning two or three post-lockdown titles over in the European Tour. So Rasmus can add his name to that list, I think, this week. So Rasmus at the top. I've also gone with Andrew Johnston. I've gone with Beef. He played very nicely last week for a tie for fourth over in Tenerife. And that was on a track that I really wouldn't have expected him to perform well on. I've got Beef down as a much more, a player who's much more suited to trickier tests. I mean, you look back, he won at Valderrama at one over par. He was a playoff loser to Matt Wallace in India a few years back. And that's normally a target score of around about 10 under to win that. So not dissimilar to this. Yet we saw him last week finishing a tie for fourth. He made a whole stack of birdies. He was 16th for strokes gained approach, 7th for strokes gained tee to green, 6th for strokes gained off the tee. And that's ideal preparation for this. 3rd for driving accuracy as well, 11th for greens in regulation. Very, very strong. Again, not getting hung up on previous course form, this is his competitive debut here. But he's done some charity gigs here in the past. He did that Beef and Beefy charity gig with Ian Botham a few years back as well. So he's seen the course, he's played the course. And he's got a very solid record on UK soil as well, on English soil. So Beef 40-1, quite happy to go in with him. And for a similar kind of logic, for players who played well or have played well recently in birdie fests but are more suited to kind of more exacting tests, I've also gone with Max Kiefer at 66-1. which I thought was quite a nice surprise for a player who's finished runner-up in two of his last three events. And again, another player should enjoy this test on debut, I think. Playoff defeat to John Catlin in Austria. We were on Catlin, so that didn't bother us at all. But that's got to have hurt Kiefer. You know, he thought he'd won that at least once, probably twice in the playoff over the course of those five holes, but it didn't quite work. Bounced back immediately, finished second behind Garrick Higo in Gran Canaria when Higo won the first of his two events over the recent past few weeks. Shot 22 under that week, and again, that's not Kiefer's game for me. That's, you know, he's much more of a grinder, but he's still learning, he's still adapting. He ranked first and second for strokes gained tee to green in those 2 weeks, so his long game, which I think is going to marry up very nicely with this, is working very, very nicely. He ran out of steam eventually. The first Tenerife event, the event that I backed him in, clearly that's when he ran out of steam. But yeah, the following week off should be nice and refreshed here now. And he's got a decent enough record in Great Britain and Ireland over the years. He's got top tens dotted around most of those locations, including sixth at the Forest of Arden last year as well, post lockdown. So lots to like with Max Kiefer for me. 66-1. Finally, Jack Senior, 125-1. I guess you look through some of the longer prices, and he was the one that stood out most to me. He's a player who's progressing nicely on the European Tour, and I think he could be approaching that breakthrough that he needs. Fourth at the South African Open last year is his strongest effort on the European Tour to date, but we've seen him second into Sunday in Qatar recently. He finished eighth in Gran Canaria, and he's clearly getting closer to a win for me. If you look at his four career wins, two on the Euro Pro Tour, two on the Challenge Tour, all of them came in Great Britain and Ireland. All of them came between 5-under and 16-under, so no massive birdie fest in there. They're all kind of this trickier to mid-score type of range as well. And that marries up with his game. He's got a strong tee to green game. That's the foundation for his play. And he's also got some practical experience at the Belfry. You go back to the Euro Pro Tour back in 2014. He led by three going into the final day here back in 2014. He eventually lost out on the final hole. He made double bogey on the final hole, which left him a shot outside the playoff, and clearly disappointment for him. But he's won four times since. He won a couple of times very quick succession after that, so clearly learned how to get his head around that quite quickly. And yeah, he should become here four wins under his belt since that point. Should be much better equipped to move things forward. Morecambe Man, he's one of those who should be quite comfortable on home soil, I think, this week. So yeah, they're my four: Senior, Kiefer, Beef, and Rasmus Hogard.
Who's your fade of the week? This is what, you know. Clearly, we know that the listeners are all over your bets at the moment because you're in such a winning record. Well, who's your fade of the week?
I'll tell you what I do. You two can tell me who you fancy, but I'll have a look at my fade of the week. The reason I don't tend to think about this, my mind works in a kind of a positive way, and the negatives just disappear to the side. So I really don't tend to have it at the forefront of mind. So go on, you talk about who you fancy, and I'll have a quick flick through my stats and see if I can...
Barry,
I hate the fade of the week too, because it's the antithesis of what we're trying to achieve. And so
the listeners have asked for it, so we will deliver. Who are you backing then?
I've backed Kiefer as well. Mm-hmm. I like the idea that the conditions could be a little bit similar to Austria. Yeah. So just a quick refresher in the brain about how good he was playing that week and how messy a par three is for a playoff hole. Don't like him. But anyway, look, hopefully he can bounce back. A couple of others, Adrian Meronk.
He's been playing well, isn't he?
Yeah. He had a 15th and a 3rd before a miscut last week. So hopefully had a nice weekend off on the islands and comes back in and goes okay here. So I've taken him 10 places and also took a little outsider on Richard Mansell, who has had 28th, 56th, 42nd and 12th last week. So hoping he just trends a little bit sharper this week.
I noticed Niall played well last week, didn't he?
He did, yeah. And I didn't back him. I let him go last week. I completely forgot to back him. So that kind of sucked. And I also backed Rory first round leader and not outright. I just got greedy, price focused on the first round leader. And but delighted to see Rory win and happy, kind of, I guess, shut the critics up a little bit. And also for Harry as well. I think Harry Diamond was brilliant with him on
the final hole,
It's just great advice. So calm, talked him through it and came up with a brilliant decision and executed very well by Rory. So
that was that ball, I mean, it could have ended up in a far worse position, but where it actually landed, it was a nightmare, wasn't it?
No, and you could see it happening as well. If he took it on, he'd just like slam it into the bank the other side of the creek he was in. So,
with Kira Ireland in mind, that was the only downside I saw about Rory's play last week. He only hit 19 of 56 fairways.
He was trying to smash corners, though, wasn't he?
That's a problem at Kira Ireland.
Yeah, but he was,
there is fescue everywhere.
I wonder if he'll be a little bit more reserved next week in terms of he was being super aggressive off the tee.
Yeah, he did average 325, which would suggest he was close to his maximum on every shot with the driver.
He was going for just cutting these corners and accepting that he'd be maybe off the fairway to either side, but miles down.
Yeah, DeChambeau is the same. My angle here for the Belfry, the British Masters, Paul said about ball striking, Paul said about greens in regulation. I've got a player here who in the field was, I'm seeing GIR marks out of his last four, seventh, and he actually topped GIR at the Gran Canaria event. Matthias Swab. We know he can't putt, but Swab on a golf course in Northern Europe, he's Austrian, of course. I think the conditions won't faze him. To be able to just play a tree line Parkland golf course in Northern Europe, and he's coming in with form of 7th, 8th, 33. I think Swab at 28 to 30 to 1 with Treble Eight Sport, or he's available with more places at 28 or 25. So I think Swab will be the player of my choice this week at the Belfry.
He's certainly got the right game, and statistically, I can't scrub him from the list. So I couldn't put anyone off if you fancy that this will be the week that he gets that breakthrough. The player, without going too deep down the list, the player that I've deliberately swerved is Danny Willett. He's the same kind of price as Schwab. I think he's 28 to 1.
So he's your fade of the week.
Yeah. The hosts for these events haven't done overly well, and I think the burden on the hosts to for the interviews and for all the duties that are associated with it at the British Masters does add an extra element to the task. And to be fair, Danny's not been playing his best of golf either, so I've left him alone. So if we're going to call him my fade of the week, then that's Danny Willett. Yes.
Paul, I want to just flash this past you. So a part of the reason I chose Maronk and Mansell was my logic was get guys who are very good off the tee, have good strokes gained off the tee, which will give them lots of opportunities to take on this golf course when it probably won't be playing too firm and fast. So I was trying to just guys get into position. So Maronk is 7th in strokes gained off the tee and Mansell is 9th in strokes gained off the tee. So it was kind of a matching of that with price as well. That was my logic.
No. Mansell, when I started doing my preliminary work for this last week, Mansell was very high up on my list. As to how he will react after last week, because he had a great chance last week and kind of drifted away. And that will work one of two ways, I guess. It'll either motivate him or he'll be disappointed with it. Mansell wouldn't surprise me to see him around the first round lead. He's got off to decent starts recently as well, so he'll be one that I'll be considering for a first round lead. And of course, one of these weeks, he'll get off to a fast start and he'll maintain it for the four rounds. He's a capable guy, I think. I think he finished second back at was it the Euro Bank Open back last year, something like that. I think he's got some decent enough form and seems to be getting closer. And as you say, got the game to suit as well. And Maronk played well back in the Canary Islands, didn't he? So I can understand your
approach.
Angle of attack on both.
Okay. Yeah. It's just sometimes I have... You have thoughts and you just go with them and then you look for the rationale after it. This is that situation. So
that's the thing with this game, Barry. You can always build a decent narrative one way or the other.
I know. Too easy. Too many guys you can pick out. Do you need a fade of the week from me, Steve, or can we just abuse Paul if he fails?
We'll just abuse Paul. Let's crack on with the AT&T cool. Byron Nelson. AT&T Byron Nelson. A new host course this week, TPC Craig Ranch. Now, this always used to be played at Las Colinas. They then moved it to the faux links.
Trinity Forest,
which I never thought was given much of a chance by the PGA Tour. They had a four-year agreement with it, and that's been cancelled. So they've now moved it to TPC Craig Ranch, which, of course, is their own golf course because it's part of the TPC network, which is PGA Tour, effectively. This golf course is in McKinney, in Dallas itself. So this is Jordan Spieth's hometown of Dallas. There are many, many others who are based in Dallas. Well worth doing a piece of research if you think that local links is something that you want to get into this week. I know for a fact that Sung Kang uses this as his practice facility. And that's interesting with Kang, because Kang, of course, is the defending champion because he won the last one at Trinity Forest. And that was played on Zoysia grass fairways. And we'll talk about a little bit more about Zoysia in a while. But Zoysia, quite a rare grass on the PGA Tour. And then this golf course also has Zoysia grass fairway. So there's a guy that practices here at TPC Craig Ranch and then went and won the last AT&T that they played at the previous golf course. I always forget the name. You just said it, Barry. What was it called?
Trinity Forest,
yeah. So they're, I know that most of the Koreans are based here. So Siwoo Kim, for example, is definitely a Dallas guy, as is Kung Hung Lee. So there's plenty with local links. I think Hunter Mahan's based here as well. But and of course, Bryson DeChambeau. So if you want to look at that, Ryan Palmer's another. A lot of Dallas, Texas-based PGA Tour pros playing this week. Something to look into. The golf course itself, 7,468 yards. It has water hazards on 13 of them. It is a par 72. I need to change that on my review, I think, Paul. I'm listing it as a par 71, I believe. Which is very slack of me because I've been telling you guys for the last 5 weeks it's a par 72.
Par doesn't matter,
Paul. It's a par 70. Paul can change it on my review.
Par's irrelevant.
Par's irrelevant. It makes a tiny bit of a psychological difference, I would imagine, between a par 4 and a par 5, like a long par 4 versus a short par 5. You know, just that needing to get a birdie on it, whereas if you just get a par in it, you feel... There's a small difference, but yeah. Ultimately, it's who shoots
the lowest. I've no idea why I've put on my preview it's a 71 when I've been saying for the last 5 days it's a 72. I tell you why. It's because the golf course was designed as a 71. The PGA Tour have come to town and said, no. We don't want to play that tough par 547-yard 12th as a par 5, a par 4. We'll make it a very easy par 5. And this is the point here. This golf course itself has it's a Tom Weisskopf design, 2004. And whatever you read about TPC Craig Ranch, it's all about the facilities. It's a fantastic facility. The practice facilities are fantastic. The restaurants, the eateries, everything about this place is fantastic. Where you stay is great. Come and stay here. But they don't really tend to mention the golf course. from what I'm hearing and reading and from what I've seen with my own eyeballs over here in just outside of London in the southeast of England, it's difficult. But it would seem to be an easy golf course, a golf course with not a lot of reference points to it, really. it's the kind of place that the PGA Tour would go to the week before a major and say to the guys, do you want to shoot 24 under this week, guys? Well, you go and fill your bet. I'll tell you what we'll even do. We'll even make it easier by making the toughest hole on the golf course a par 5 for you. Other worthy notes, we've got the Zoysia grass fairways. We've got Bermuda grass rough at 2.5 inches. I don't think that'll play any part whatsoever. The holes are tree lined, but apparently the fairways are like the number one runway at Heathrow. They are wide as you like. And they are, and this is worthy of note. I think the Zoysia is worthy of note. They are bent grass greens. So we've actually, at last, this week, moved away from Bermuda grass or Bermuda grass base greens. We're dealing with bent grass for only the second time so far in 2021. Bent grass greens this week. And we often see different names start to pop up when greens change from Bermuda grass to bent grass. I mean, for example, I was all over looking at Keith Mitchell, for obvious reasons, played brilliantly last week. But when you look at Keith Mitchell and you look at his results, most of his contending performances do come on Bermuda grass or Paspalum greens. He's had a top 7 or 8, I think, somewhere like Houston on bent grass, although they weren't pure bent grass greens back at the Golf Club of Houston. But he's also played well at the John Deere Classic, so he can play well on bent grass. But most of his top contending performances and his win, of course, came on Bermuda grass. So that's the kind of just the small intricacies I've been looking at. Who performs better on bent grass over Bermuda grass? Another player, of course, that we know wins all of his titles so far on Bermuda grass is Siwoo Kim. This is bent grass. So, you know, there's ways of looking at it. Of course, there's ways of cutting the cake. But 7,468 yards, it's a par 72. I personally think with no win for the first 2 days, I think it's difficult to say. We're recording this on a Tuesday, but it looks like there could be wind over the weekend. But the first 2 days look flat calm. I think they're going to take this apart. That's my feel on it.
Yeah, it does look like. I had a look at the course flyovers last night, and things looked quite generous off the tee. So
generous off the tee, yeah. 6,800 square feet bent grass greens. They're saying a tournament stimp of sort of 11, 11 and a half. None of this is going to scare any of these pros whatsoever.
They're going into the 20s this week, aren't they?
Yeah, it feels 20 underish, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So I always tend to think it's always been a funny event, this, for me. I mean, you look at previous winners of this and you look at their world rankings. And it's also funny on the basis that it's not funny in terms of humour, but it's the week before the PGA Championship. And again, we often, you know, of the top boys who are focused on this. Or I read an interview with DeChambeau, and I know DeChambeau will be popular. People are saying this is a bomber's golf course. He can just rip, he can destroy it. And there's a couple of drivable par fours on the back. There's one at 330 yards, the 14th. He's got to be licking his chops on that one. There's one on the front, a 361-yard par 4. I thought he's licking his chops with that. But I haven't seen Bryson DeChambeau the week before so far win a tournament. And that's the kind of angle I'm looking at. I'm looking at players that have played well on Zoysia grass fairways. Now, just for research purposes, Zoysia grass is incumbent at TPC Southwind, where they used to play the St. Jude Classic. They now play the WGC St. Jude Invitational, which Paul Williams covers every year. So that's Zoysia grass. Zoysia grass is also at Eastlake, where they play the Tour Championship every year. So we've got something to go off here. Zoysia grass was incumbent at Trinity Forest, where they played the 2018 and the 2019 AT&T. Sung Kang, of course, defending champion. They also played Zoysia grass, the 2011 PGA Championship, which was won by Keegan Bradley at Atlanta Athletic. And also the one that was won by Brooks Koepka, the 2018 PGA at Belrive. Also, so those are the courses there that we've got Zoysia grass records for. The other angle I've looked at is just the world rankings of players that have won this. If I go back to Jason Duffner, Duffner and Garcia were both in the top 20. I mean, Duffner was 21st, Garcia was 15th. But we've then got Bay. Sungmoon Bay was 106th, Todd 136th, Bowditch 127th. We had Horschel at 76th, Aaron Wise was 99th, and Sung Kang 138th. So there's quite a range there between, you know, 100 out to 140-ish on the official world golf rankings. So players of that in that kind of regions could be something certainly something I've looked at. Players that are on an upward swing. I mean, I know for a fact, because I saw a message from you yesterday, Barry, that you're keeping with Charles Spartzel this week. And I'm on him as well. So, spoiler alert, I've gone for four this week. One of them is Charles Spartzel, who has played fantastically at TPC Southwind. He was second there to Daniel Berger in 2017, so he's played well on the Zoysia grass fairways in the past. And when we're talking about a switch from Bermuda grass to bent grass, I know that Charles Spartzel has won on Bermuda grass. I know that he won the Valspar. But he's a Masters champion. And if you look at his European Tour victories, you know, it's just a whole catalogue of them in South Africa, isn't there? Royal Johannesburg 2010 and 2011, Leopard Creek 2012, 2013, 2015. He won at the Pretoria Country Club in 2016. I think a switch this week from Bermuda grass putting surfaces to bent grass putting surfaces might be the switch that Charles needs to actually get the putter working. And we know Charles tee to green recently has been phenomenal. He was fourth strokes gained approach and third for strokes gained tee to green last week at Quail Hollow, which is a proper big boys golf course. And across my 8-week trackers, he's 10th for greens in regulation, 10th for strokes gained approach, 14th tee to green and 17th for strokes gained current form. So I'm in on Charles Spartzel. That's one player that I've taken. 66 to 1, I got 8 places each way with Coral on Charles Spartzel this week. Right. I entered this week with the mindset of I'm not going to force any tips. I just want them to come naturally to me. And I want players that, just looking through the research and where they've played well and how they're playing, just fit nicely. So they've basically forced themselves onto me backing them. The three I came up with were Spartzel at 66 to 1. I think Aaron Wise at 66 to 1. I got him 8 places each way of 50 odds with Paddy Power. I think Wise is a must back for me this week. He won at Trinity Forest in 2018. So he won on Zoysia grass fairways that week. And you just look at his three professional wins. They've come at 19 under on the Canadian Tour. He shot 21 under when he won on the Corn Ferry Tour. And he shot 23 under when he won this AT&T Byron Nelson in 2018. And if you look at his last three top 10 finishes on the PGA Tour, they came at 18 under and 19 under at the Mayakoba Classic in 2020. So part of this season. And then he finished 8th at the Barracuda Championship up out there in the desert out near Reno. Is that Nevada? I think it's Nevada. Yeah. He shot 23 birdies that week when finishing 8th. And that's played on that modified Stableford scoring system. He topped birdies that week. Wise. He comes to the party when scoring is low. It's fact. And when I just saw him just playing, I think he made the cut at one over, and then he basically shot 5 under last week across the weekend at Quail Hollow. A golf course he has finished second at in the past, I get that. Only McIlroy, Anser, Victor and DeChambeau shot lower weekend totals than Aaron Wise last week. He was 5th for strokes gained tee to green at Quail Hollow. The year he won this, he'd finished 2nd at Quail Hollow, and then he came here and he won the AT&T Byron Nelson. So I love Wise. I think Wise has got he's a real ball striker. Again, with Wise, it tends to be the putter, but even the putter was warming up Saturday and Sunday at Quail Hollow. That makes him a danger, I think. He's currently ranked 130 in the world. And the other one I took force myself into my tips this week. He won't pop models, never does, but he's a nine-time winner on the PGA Tour. And we've been noticing recently a definite uptrend with this player. Up until the start of April, he's 160th in the FedEx Cup standings. He was nowhere. And then, I think he'd had seven 2021 starts. He'd only elicited 32nd at Torrey Pines and 68th at Bay Hill and five missed cuts. He was in a complete mess. Then, Valero Texas Open, he finished. He was fourth after 36 holes and finished sixth. That's where I took note. He had a smile on his face. His approach play was fantastic. Since then, 42nd at the RBC Heritage. He was first for strokes gained around the green. That won't surprise you when I say his name. He then went to TPC Louisiana for the team event, where he was with Keith Mitchell. He finished fourth. And then last time out at Valspar, he was 11th. He was 9th after 54 holes going into Sunday. Finished 11th. He's a nine-time PGA Tour winner. But actually, his numbers across my eight-week trackers are really strong, very strong for this particular individual. It's Brant Snedeker, by the way, who I've taken 90-1, eight places with Paddy Power. But he's 12th for putting average, putts per GIR. Well, that won't surprise you with Brant Snedeker. But from a strokes game perspective, he's 17th for approach. This was the number. 10th for tee to green for Brant Snedeker. Yeah. 16th for putting. And he's 6th over the last 8 weeks for strokes gained current form. I'll take the 90-1.
Yeah, there's definitely something been percolating with Brent for a little while now, and
I just saw him at Valero. He was joshing with his caddy. He was just enjoying being in the mix. And again, that's a Texas golf course, long par 72. Snedeker, he's won twice at Torrey Pines, so the length of the course doesn't worry me this week. I think it's well within his wheelhouse. But he's just the sort of an ex-elite player who knows how to win. Who can take out this kind of tournament? Can take out this kind of tournament? No problem at all if he can get himself in contention.
Yeah, gets that putter going again. It's such a potent weapon for him, isn't it?
So he's at 90-1, which I thought was a fantastic price. I took Wise at 66s, and I took Charles Spartzel at 66s. Another player of note that I haven't backed is, who I think could go well this week, is one. This might be one that you've selected, Paul, because he's right in your wheelhouse. Jonathan Vegas, 125-1. Vegas is playing some really nice golf at the moment. He's a two-time winner on bent grass greens up in Canada. I just think Vegas, he's the one that didn't make it for me. And as we know with Johnny, he won the Bob Hope lottery all those years ago. Low scoring events, and Puerto Rico was where he popped up this year. Vegas could be right in the mix this week, I think. But yeah, I should have added him, but I didn't. So
could be a consideration for DraftKings again.
Yeah, I think Vegas is up there. I've taken one at the very top, and I'll go through that latterly. We've got about 4 minutes to go. So you two run through who you are taking this week at the Byron Nelson.
Down you go, Barry.
Okay, I've also gone Schwartzel. He did well to finish that low down last week, considering how hot he was tee to green. He finished 20th. So I, even though his price is chopped this week, I have to stay with him now because I'll lose my mind if he goes well. And maybe that's what I'm kind of banking on. The switch of surface will kind of unlock the putter a little bit. So he better be trying everything this week and every single putter on the testing green.
His last top five on the PGA Tour was on bent grass up at TPC, the one they play in Minnesota.
Yeah.
The 3M Open.
I'd say he's losing his mind hitting the ball that well and not getting the results to match it. So fingers crossed something clicks for him this week.
Yeah.
The next angle I took was, again based on, it wasn't based on driving this week because it should be pretty easy for most guys this week. It was to go with greens and reg and strokes gained approach this week because I figure this is the guys who are best at that will give themselves the most opportunities on a course that's going to be scoring quite low. So one that popped in the right kind of mix of price and whatnot for me was Doug Gim. So I dug a little deeper into it, and it would appear that he doesn't really enjoy putting on, he doesn't really enjoy putting full stop, but particularly on Bermuda grass greens. So again, I'm looking at this switch to bent, seems to match up a little bit better with his kind of hitting at least flat for putting or having a slightly positive strokes gained for the week. So that's the angle on Gim. Paul, jump in there for one while I pull up the data on the next.
Yeah, yeah. I've only backed two, actually. First on Scott Piercy at 150-1. What I liked last week about Piercy was that he led the field for par breakers. 21 birdies and an eagle last week. Finished 11th. Fourth for strokes gained tee to green, which was his best effort on that count since finishing second in this event back in 2019.
He's got a decent record. 50-1.
Yeah, yeah, well, 150-1 he is this week, so yeah.
He was outstanding last week, too, Tyrone, yeah, Pearson.
Yeah, he was really good. Decent record on Texas as well. It's obviously got that second Byron, second Byron here in 2019. Fifth also in the same event, 2015. 10th in Houston, 2015. 7th at the Dean and DeLuca back in 2017. So some decent Texan form. And you look at his wins, 2011, then 2012, 2015, 2018. Nice little sequence going there if he wins in 2021. 15 under, 17 under, 19 under, and then 22 under in the Zurich, which was his pairs event win. So clearly can score. Clearly got the birdies flowing last week as well. So I thought 150-1. Yeah, with eight places, I'm quite happy to take that. The other one I've taken is Satoshi Kodaira. You mentioned a second ago, 300-1 with eight places. I thought there was no reason not to give him a go after he found some form last week. I remember when he finished 28th at the Masters and then won at Harbortown the following week. He kind of flashed that bit of form the first week and then just went bang the second. And new course, no disadvantage in terms of course, form or history. Fifth for strokes gained putting, as you mentioned a second ago for Kodaira. So at the price, I thought I'd give him a go each way. And of course, Matt Every's playing this week, so he's up at 350-1 first round leader.
I love it.
No other explanation.
Never
required.
Say die.
That's me.
My final was Peter Uihlein. So playing has a hot streak results, had a win there recently on the KFT, and he's in a 24th in the KFT rankings, and he's 152nd, I think, if my memory serves correct, from a check a little before the show on the FedEx Cup list. So he's just about, you know, a decent performance will bump him up towards that 125. And so he's got that achievable kind of goal to get into that 125 and then maintain it for the rest of the year to get his full card. So a couple of good results at this particular event, not necessarily the course, the last couple of years. And they all matched up to give me, was it 80-1? 80-1, eight places.
Yeah. Very nice.
I've got about 4 minutes, so I'm going to focus here. PJ Splits 101 on Twitter, well worth a follow. He's helped me out in the past, PJ Splits. He comes out with some fantastic data. Top six players strokes gained across the weeks before a major from 2016 onwards. Daniel Berger at one, Kuchar at two, Koepka at three, Fowler at four, Matsuyama at five, Jordan Spieth at six. So there's some interesting names straight away. I just looked at tournaments that have been in. I looked at majors, who's done well at majors in the week before. Forget about the Bridgestone Invitational and the one they play at Southwind. WGCs are going to throw up big names. But I just thought it was interesting. 2019 US Open, the week before the Canadian Open, McIlroy won at 10-1. And then 2018, the week before the US Open, at Southwind, which was the St. Jude Classic then, DJ won 7-1, 10-1. So that got me thinking. I know that PGA Championship 2019, Sung Kang won this, but that field was weak. Very, very weak that week. Koepka, I think, was something like 17-2 or 15-2 that week. And he came close to winning that. So Koepka almost took that out at a short price as well. I think one of the big names will get in it. The most likely, the one I'm going to fade, my fade of the week is John Rahm. I think if you look at the top, it was top four, but DJ's now withdrawn. I wouldn't have taken DJ either. The two I was interested in and spent a lot of time looking at were DeChambeau. You know, we're talking about a golf course with wide fairways, bomber's paradise. I think he clearly DeChambeau can go well. And we know that he takes out tournaments on a regular basis. But I actually took Jordan Spieth. And here are the reasons why I took Jordan Spieth. He has two wins in Texas. He has five further top fives in Texas and a further four top tens in Texas. So a win, five top fives and four top tens. That's pretty mad. All in his home state of Texas. Seven of his 12 wins have been the outing prior to or a major. So seven of 12 wins, the outing before a major or a major itself. That's pretty crazy. You look at my eight-week trackers. Second for putting average. Well, that won't surprise you. It's Jordan Spieth. But these numbers here are crazy. Second for off the tee, strokes gained. Second for approach. First for around the green. First for tee to green. 13th for strokes gained putting. Strokes gained current form. He's first across my eight-week trackers. Pretty crazy. Then you look at the fact that this tournament in his hometown of Dallas has always been the one that he stated is the most important to him. They gave him his first ever professional tournament outing when he was a 16-year-old. Incredibly enough, back then, I think it was 2010, might be wrong, he was 16, he was in the top 10 after 54 holes as a 16-year-old. They used to play that at Las Colinas. He never got on with the golf course. I just think this new golf course, the way that he's playing and the way that he holds this tournament so close to his heart, he's going to be arriving here really wanting to focus and have a huge week here. He won, of course, two outings ago in the Valero Texas Open. He was absolutely dominant from tee to green at the Masters, but the putter let him down that particular week that Matsuyama won. I'm just all over Jordan Spieth. I managed to get Spieth while DJ was in the field. 3 points each way. I took 12-1 with William Hill, 8 places each way, 50 odds. So I've gone for Spieth at the top. My fade of the week will be John Rahm. So for me, just to close that, Spieth, I managed to get at 12s. I've also taken Svartzel at 66s, Aaron Wise at 66s, and Brandt Schnedeker at 90-1.
I should also add Seamus Power. I'm not missing that this week.
Oh, you're putting Power in, aren't
you? Yeah. Well, look at. I think the length will help. He likes shooting low numbers. So,
Would you be interested first round leader on Power? Because I know he does well in that as well.
I'm just hunting that down on Boyle Sports right now, which seems to have the best combo of odds and places. I'll put my Seamus Power up against your Matt Every for first round leader, Paul, for a point.
Chase each other down the bottom of the leaderboard.
Should be some good action this week. Some very good action across the Belfry and across the Byron Nelson.
Yeah, don't forget that the Belfry starts on Wednesday.
Yes. So you've got to be fast. We will be recording tomorrow our PGA Championship research podcast. I always love the research podcast that we do. So looking forward to that immensely. We will hope to release that Wednesday evening over here in the UK or tea time. If it's at the very latest, it will be Thursday morning. But yeah, looking forward to that immensely. Are you looking forward to it, gentlemen?
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Thank you. Thank you for your time, gents. I hope your bets go well.
Yeah, best of luck, guys.
And thank you to the listeners. We will be back later this week with our 2021 PGA Championship Research Podcast. Thanks for listening. Don't forget 5-star reviews. They would be much appreciated. I will read them out in our PGA Championship Podcast next week. See you later. Thanks. Bye-bye.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved. With all the stats and the tips and so much more. Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system. It's the golf betting system.